clinical, in the medical space way.
We just have 20 seconds.
So what we really need to do is we need to find out everybody who has the disease. So we need to do a public health testing, test those with symptoms, test those, to sample those who don't have symptoms so that we can distribute our resources, so that we can identify and isolate people who have the disease before they're symptomatic, while they're spreading it, and also do contact tracing. That will be the good for the good of all of us. That way we don't document the epidemic, we actually can change the course of it.
Kamara Phyllis-Jones, I want to thank you for being with us. We're going to do part two, posted at democracynow.org, family physician, epidemiologist, past president of the American Public Health Association, currently Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study at Harvard University fellow. That does it for our show. Thank you to all the team that has made this show possible. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Hi, this is Jinka, KBOO's web and new media coordinator. I want to let you know that on the KBOO website, we've compiled a resource list with links for families, musicians, houseless, anyone who needs support locally during this crisis. That can be found at kboo.fm/COVID-19 resources. That's kboo.fm/COVID-19 resources.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
And the time is just about 8 o'clock here at KBOO Portland. It is time for KBOO Talk Radio, and here is your host, Linda Olson-Osterlund.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. I'm so happy to be on with you this morning. Excuse me. And this is Thursday Morning Talk Radio here at KBOO, and I am your host, Linda Olson-Osterlund. And our topic today is Iran, the coronavirus, and sanctions. And I have as a guest for us, I'm really thrilled to have our guest on. His name is Hossein Rohantalab. I said it right the first time, but I'm afraid I might mess it up. But his name is Hossein Rohantalab, and he was originally born in Tehran in 1944 and came here as a 20-year-old and went to college here, got his BS, his MS, and his PhD in chemistry down at OSU. He's lived here for all those years, and he's traveled widely. He has a lot of family still in Iran, and he traveled there for 7 months in 2013 and then again for 3 months in 2016, and so has a really good sense of his native country. So I'm very happy to bring him on to talk to us today about Iran and sanctions and the coronavirus. So welcome to KBOO, Hossein.
Good morning.
Do I have you there?
Yes, Linda, good morning.
Good morning. So glad to have you with us this morning. So speaking of the coronavirus, I'll just bring people up to date about where Iran is in this. I believe it's, in terms of deaths, it's about number five of different countries. As of today, 66,220 dead people, I mean confirmed cases of coronavirus, and 4,110 deceased. At first, it looked like Iran was going to have more than many other countries, but compare that to the United States at 435,167. Or compare it to smaller countries like France and Italy, which are having huge death tolls. France, I believe, is almost 11,000. Italy is up to almost 18,000. Spain, over 15,000. Those are all more than the United States, which hasn't quite reached 15,000. So we know the coronavirus has hit Iran and hit it bad. There was a lot of criticism of Iran at the time and, saying that they had held their elections without announcing that they knew the virus was in the country. I'm not sure the veracity of that or not. They did just have national elections in the end of February. But I think it's important for us to talk about the sanctions that have been brought against Iran under Trump. And they had been eased under Obama and that deal. And now international community is saying these are killing people in Iran because Trump has been doubling down. So that's what we want to talk about today. What's the effect of what's going on in Iran today? So, Hossein, I know you stay in contact with family there. Can you talk a little bit, well, can you talk right now about a little bit about yourself and your relationship to Iran now, and then what you know about what's going on in Iran today?
Well, if you allow me about 2 or 3 minutes to lay the land of Iran for the audience.
Sure. Can you speak a little bit louder?
Yes, of course.
Good. Thank you.
Iran is the 19th largest country by land, or 17, and the large, and about 19 by population. Iran is the most ethnic group as far as the number of ethnicity. Iran is number one in the world. It has about 22 different ethnic groups that have lived in Iran, different regions, for tens of thousands of years. They're Kurdish, Lorish, and Baluchis, many, many different, and we visited them all in those 10 months of traveling. The first one we drove about 17,500 miles, and we visited those communities, those provinces, and they're totally different culturally, socially, and sometimes it would take me a long time to get them engaged with me, even with me. But there were a lot of them were very open. So it's really a big range of population that they're living happily together. There's no war in Iran. Iran has not been attacking any country in the world for the last, couple of centuries. And there are different languages, Turkish, Baluchis, Kurdish, and each one has their own language, music, food, clothing, and so there are a lot of...
So a very diverse country with...
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I was going to just say it sounds like it's a very diverse country managed to make peace among itself over
quite,
these years.
Quite diverse, yes. The Persian ethnic group is the dominance, and the Persian language is the dominance. One prominent thing in Iran is the education and culture. Iranian poetry and writing goes back to 10th century, and the poets are revered across the country. Their tombs are visited by the people across the country every year, and they recite their poetry by memory. The kids learn how to have a contest, and it was really amazing what we saw on the TV when we were there in those 2 trips, that the kids sit separate from each other, not even seeing each other, and then they recite poetry, not one line, the whole word, the whole poem, sometimes it's about 10, 20 lines by memory. And the contest is that the letter of alphabet that the first contester ends, the next contester has to start his poetry with that.
Oh, my goodness. That's incredibly hard.
It's
I can't
really
imagine
hard.
That.
During the Shah's time, I used to listen to it, but it was only one line, and the audience were always... very mature, and there were some of them poets or really advanced. But this one,
yeah.
What we saw were kids between 10 to 15 years old, and it was really amazing. Mm-hmm. But
Can you tell me about, just briefly, since you're mentioning education, is the literacy rate, what's the literacy rate, do you know, generally in Iran?
Right now, it's about 92%, 93%.
That might be considered more than Oregon, given our graduation rate. No, that's not the same as literacy.
So, literacy in Iran is very high, especially now since the revolution in the rural areas, and particularly for women, is higher than men. Both at university level and at the high school and elementary school level. and these are available in the internet. People can look at them themselves. And the reason is that they're more facilitated. Facilities available for the rural areas students to come to centers for education, not to be stuck in their villages. And one effect of the, as much as we don't like it, the Ayatollahs and their mullahs has been that they have convinced the people to send their kids away from home to get educated, especially the girls, because they feel safe. They feel safe that they're not sexually,
mature, and so that they don't get involved with each other sexually. You know, it reminds me a little bit of Jose. We have a school in Eastern Oregon where all of the kids who live so far apart, it's in Southeastern Oregon, who live so far apart, actually, and maybe the school is closed down, but about 10 years ago, I remember it was still going, where kids do go and live at their school because they live out on ranches and small areas and they can't go to school otherwise. It's the only way for there to be a school for all of the kids to come to, especially over the winter. So many of the kids live at that school in Eastern Oregon. It's a practical way of handling a rural situation where you really want people to get full education.
Yeah. So, but one thing that, you know, is happening in Iran now, because of the sanctions, prolonged sanctions, you know, it started since 1980s, but it has increased dramatically, and now is really draconian. It has affected people's life. In both time that we visited Iran, 2013, the dollar, the Iranian money versus the U.S. dollar had fallen by 80%. But the people were still managing it by doing more, the men mostly, being the breadwinners for multi-jobs. The woman get the one job, but the men will do more than one to make the ends meet. They were okay. And when we traveled all over the country, we did not see very sad people, very worn out people. But 2016, when we went back, the nuclear deal was about to come in place, and people were happy about that. And then the new president was elected. They were celebrating in the streets. Those were good, but then after that, more sanctions were placed on people. I've heard that people are really, really stressed out, and the effect of sanction has been transferred completely to the people, not to the government, because they still have the means of surviving and defending themselves. So that's why they focus so much on the defense and having remarkable advances in those. But on the other hand, the average people are getting hurt. So during the COVID-19, for example, what they need is a lot of medical help, medical medicines. There are a lot of pharmacies in Iran, but a lot of them get their raw material from abroad, and they make them in Iran. But now they cannot do this transaction through the banks, no matter what country, whether it's China, from Germany, or before it was from U.S. also. So they're sort of paralyzed. And when the administration announces that the humanitarian aid is not in the sanction, it is just the empty rhetoric. It's the
I was reading in Al Jazeera and other, also, many things. So it's hard to search on the web anymore for what you're looking for. You have to look a little harder because it only wanted to give me literally sponsored right-wing newspapers when I would put in things about Iran, and so I would have to look for others. But, you know, as recently as I believe it was yesterday, and a couple days ago, Pompeo said they were doubling down on things. And then on the 40th, that was on the 40th anniversary of when Iran was in conflict with the United States and held hostages. And so he comes out on that day and says, no, we're not going to, give up these sanctions. We've been doubling down, and they have been pushing all the other countries, European countries and stuff, even tighter to not allow any kind of aid to get in. And then Trump, in his typical fashion, you know, someone says, well, would you negotiate with them? He says, well, if they want to call me, they can talk to me. I'm happy to talk to them. You know, so throwing a tiny bit of confusion in there, but I think he knows that the leaders of Iran at this time do not want to have direct talks with Trump. They very clearly don't trust him and don't respect him in any way. Can you talk a little bit about the recent elections? Because supposedly this policy of Trump and Pompeo and, you know, Bolton and their ilk was to make Iran, to have the people of Iran rise up and throw out the current government and to support progressive forces there. But talk about the most recent election and how well that policy is working, would you?
Well, you know, one thing that I learned very firsthand in our travel in Iran, especially around the border of the Iran-Iraq border, way up on the mountain, there are a lot of provinces there that they speak Kurdish and Turkish, and they're mostly Sunni people. And we spend a lot of time there. It's a beautiful area. And I would pose the question to some of those people there that were relatively, you know, in the government and also ordinary people. The question was that, well, how do they feel about the U.S. help if they want to help the U.S. and Iranian people to overthrow the regime? And they look at me as though I'm an idiot. Said, can't you look
an
at
idiot?
Iran?
Did you say?
Yes, they look at me as though I'm an idiot. They said, can't you look at Iraq, Libya, and Syria? And then those are all the U.S. helps that caused this chaotic situation. There are millions of dead. And no, Iran is one country and one government, and we're all behind it. And we don't want any government, outside interference, any outside help, because they don't come clean. They always come with the baggage. And then what happens is they want to overthrow the regime and take the goods from the country and leave the country in destruction. So we're going to defend Iran. We're going to defend the country if anybody wants to attack Iran or wants to infiltrate Iran. So from that point, Iran will be united completely. All this dissident that we hear for freedom, which is correct, which they have to do it, is against the Iranian regime, Iranian execution of power, which is totally sad, inhumane. But when it comes to the unity of the country, they're all going to be behind it. If the U.S. attacks Iran, Iran becomes completely, 81 million people will be uprising against the attack. Right now, you see all kinds of uprising against the regime. They all will go away. And I heard those from multiple provinces that I did not expect, because those provinces during the Shahs, they were always fighting with the Shah. They were always fighting with the central government because they wanted, Kurdish people wanted liberation. They wanted independence, just like the Kurdish in Iraq and Syria. But now they don't. They all want to be in part of Iran because they know as a unit, as one province, they will fail, but as there are 31 provinces in Iran. They will stay as a country and they're safe. And as a result, Iran has not been attacked, has not been, I mean, the authorities.
Except for Iraq and
yeah,
the
they
80s.
Know that. You know, they cannot separate Iranians from each other to and infiltrate. So from that part, whatever they say, that they new diplomats or new election in Iran will change the regime, it is not true. It's just not going to happen. If anything happens, is when all the foreign interference goes away and Iranian can take care of their own business. Because there they can, you know, bring another something that they think it was going to help them, help their lives, help their...
Yeah.
But yeah, there are a lot of good things that this regime has done that they cannot ignore either. Like, you know, there, we have more women writers in Iran than we ever had in ever history.
Yes.
You have the best movie makers.
Hossein, can I interrupt you for a moment? I want to, I'll introduce you again just so that our audience who's been listening knows who's on. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for Thursday Morning Talk Radio, and I've been talking with Hossein Rohantalab, who was originally from Tehran and has lived in this country for many years and has also traveled to Iran in the last 10 years twice and gone to every province in Iran with his wife. So this is the time when I want to open the one phone line because during the coronavirus, we're coming to you all from our homes, and I want to thank our staff tremendously for all the work they're doing, keeping the station on air, themselves going in to help do that, but, you know, pretty much one at a time in the studio. So we're coming to you from home, so we have one phone line left, and that phone line is open for you, the listener. The number to call is 503-231-8187. The trick with this is just get on that phone right now, dial 503-231-8187. and then if you're another caller who wants to get on, you'll notice that you're getting a busy line and just, you know, hang on or call again as soon as the first caller gets off. And that way we'll be able to take as many of you as we can. We definitely want to hear from you. You know, the coronavirus and so many aspects of it have captured so much of our attention, you know, especially when many of us are staying directly at home. But I feel like we can't let things like Trump doubling down on a country like Iran when the rest of the world is saying, hey, they need to receive aid from us, stop interfering. We need to be able to get our aid to them. So I think it's really important that we look at the other, especially the foreign policy aspects of what's going on underneath the coronavirus, because the Trump regime is moving forward. So that's why the topic today, and I hope that you're finding it interesting. So the number to call, once again, is 503-231-8187. Call in with your questions or comments about Iran and the coronavirus and our U.S. sanctions against it. Hossein, when I was reading, some of the things that I was reading talked about the difficulty of the sanctions in terms of all sorts of different aspects. Can you talk a little bit about the kinds of areas of life they impact and how that happens to be? For example, you and I were talking about oil and gasoline and the change that the Trump administration's sanctions have made there.
Okay, so Iran is the main exporter of oil. But we had...
Right.
One of the we have multiple refineries in Iran. One of them was in Abadan, which is in the Persian Gulf, was the biggest refinery in the Middle East. But during the Iran-Iraq War, it was decimated, and we lost a major capacity in Iran. So, as a result, the government imported gasoline for the internal use. And as the sanction was taken hold of it, then the Iranian revenue and was diminished. The quality of the oil that the gasoline that they were importing was reduced to get a cheaper price gas. And as a result, the the climate, it affected the climate dramatically. It was a highly poisoned gas in terms of the pollution, the exhaust full of lead gas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is cheaper
gas. As a result, the Iranian people in a lot of places that are mostly in the mountain region or so have a lower immunity, lower respiratory defense system, are weaker. So the coronavirus that attacks your respiratory system is pretty prone to attack more, and that's why they get more deaths. But also the first sign of the coronavirus was a place called Qom, which is a holy city. The prophet's daughter grave is there, tomb is there, and is a big source of tourist visit from Shiites across the world. And during those times, a lot of students, of the religious students, were coming from China and visiting Qom directly. And in those places, they just don't go and visit. They go and touch the tomb. It's a big, huge, very elaborate, gold-plated, and et cetera. And something
in China?
They kiss it, they stay there, and then it's a mass. It's like you've seen the Hajj in Saudi Arabia, that the people are just neck and neck, bumper to bumper. And that is a mass of people moving along, but some people just cling to those and just hold on to it, and everybody is touching everybody. So as a result, the outbreak was in Qom, and a lot of people got killed. And before they know it, they had many, many more people going and coming back from China. And so it spread. And that is also visited by many people in Iran, their home is. And so, and is still going on. I mean, those places.
Yes, so you talk about it's similar to what we see here, where large numbers of people congregated, they're now having a huge upsurge, you know, from Mardi Gras, for example, in Louisiana.
Yeah.
It's not the same kind of a celebration, but nonetheless, where people come together in large numbers and congregate and dance with each other and, you know, have the wonderful kind of time humans like to have with each other. We pass disease. And so do you think that there's still ongoing cases are coming from people still visiting that site that has basically been
it was reduced to a large extent because both the people start observing the social distancing. And also
yes.
The government start enforcing that. But now after I had a call 2 days ago from my sister in Tehran that she said, oh, the streets are crowded again and people are not observing the social distances. They're getting bored. They don't think it's...
So people are going back out into the
streets. Yeah, they don't trust the government. You know, they don't trust the government when they said that, you know, you got to stay home. They think, but they have to go out to get food because Tehran, for example, is officially they say it's about 12 to 14 million people, but it's more like 20 million people. It's pretty crowded, like New York.
It's very large. Yeah.
Yeah, very crowded, and social distancing is really hard to observe. Especially there are a lot of uprisers, there are a lot of apartments that the people have to commute through, elevators or stairs, so there's no way that you can do it. And they have to go buy goods. You know, the little houses, they don't have big refrigerator, freezers, so every day they have to commute. And as a result, it's really hard to control. And, you know, talking about masks, well, you have shortage in New York, you have shortage in U.S., and Iran being under sanction, they don't have any masks. They make, they're very savvy. Like after the revolution, Iranians...
Well, they're educated people, obviously, so they know how to take care of themselves.
Right, but they don't have the basic material. That's the problem.
Yes.
Pharmaceuticals don't have basic material. People, ordinary people don't have basic material to take care of themselves. And that's what they want. And I'm reading in the internet, it said 2,000 former diplomats and national security leaders from the United States and Europe called on the Trump administration Monday to ease sanctions against Iran as part of a battle against the coronavirus pandemic. And even as the statement came out, the Iranian government spokesman said Iran would never ask the United States for help during the outbreak and demanded that sanctions be lifted instead. They said, we can take care of ourselves. Just let us leave. Let us do the trade. Let us get our what we need. We export, we import. So right now the import is stopped. Export is stopped. So it's really hard.
Well, and I'm going to let the audience know, once again, the listeners know that you can call in with questions and comments. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. In terms of what's happening there right now, I wanted to make sure that people understood that the sanctions are both on what kinds of goods can be traded to Iran, but they're also on the banks, so that it's very hard for, you know, you can't, it's hard to go around the bank. So any bank that would do business with, from Europe, that would do business with Iran is being stopped from doing that to prevent
totally
Iran
halted.
From being able.
Yeah. Totally halted. And so
totally halted.
Yeah, yeah. The Iran used to do, and it still does probably, some trades type of deal with oil, like they sell oil to India or China, partly with used to be with money, but now is with goods. But that also is very limited, and that also is very 81 million people. It's very hard to get everything through those kind of trades. And if you want to have some kind of pharmaceuticals, some medicine, the one that they make in Iran to be available to Iranians, you don't have the basic material. And the black market, that black market that provides this thing, the price is astronomical. And they say about the cancer? No. I have one of my nieces, I have nine sisters, and each of them have many children, and they have children. So I have about 200-300 nieces and nephews and their siblings.
That's amazing.
They're highly educated. One of them is a pharmacist, married to a general practitioner, and they both are on the front line. And they say, we do not have the basic material even for cancer. The cancer drugs are not available anymore.
So someone who had cancer and was receiving chemotherapy may not have been able to even finish their course.
Exactly. That's right. You know, if you have a dental problem, you need to do the fillings. The basic material is not there for them to do that. So
they're very concrete ways.
Yeah, this is not this is not a winnable battle the U.S. has started with Iran, because the people of Iran, Tammy, my wife, was really surprised to see how they loved Americans. When they saw her, it was an American scene after 30 years or so. They were all congregating against us, especially the young people. Well, I want to take pictures. And they spoke fluent English. Iran is one of the most sophisticated countries as far as the technology, as far as education in the Middle East. You go to
I remember when I was in college that there are a ton of Iranian students down in Corvallis at OSU, for sure, and very educated and much more worldly than I, coming from, you know, small towns in Oregon. I was very impressed with all of the people I met. There was an Iranian student union at that time at OSU, and they were part of hoping for a change against the Shah. I know they were not in favor of ending up with the religious, with the Ayatollah in control.
Your memory serves you very well. I was part of them. But what I was saying is that Iranian people showed Tammy that how they really love American people. But when it came to the government,
I remember talking about that.
I'm sorry?
I remember Tammy talking about that, and I remember also Medea Benjamin, who's written a book about Iran and traveled to Iran about 2 years ago now, said that everywhere they traveled, and they didn't have family there, but that everywhere they traveled, they were so welcomed. They were really surprised to see, because we know that our country is causing harm. And so when Medea or others would go there in particular to be able to learn about that and combat it, they were very happy with the response that they got. Almost everywhere they went, people were saying, it was basically, we love Americans, we just don't like your government.
Yeah. I mean, now you can say, I am Iranian, I'm biased. You can say Nadia Benjamin is politically oriented, she may be biased. But Steve Reed, he went to Iran a couple of times. He came back and he said, and he travels all over the world.
Now, who is this?
Steve Reed. Anyway, this guy, he was an OPB
programmer.
Yeah, programmer. And then now he is traveling, and then he has these programs. And he said Iranian people are the most hospitable, the most guest-loving people in the world. Now, this is the guy that has no beef with the politics of Iran or U.S. He just travels, and he has a speaking program. Ricky Steves, that's his name.
Oh, I know who you mean, yes, yeah. The travel guide, yes.
Yes, yes. And anyway, they are. And then they were saying that they would ask Tammy this question that, okay, am I a terrorist? And Tammy would laugh and say, why do you ask me? He said, because that's why we hear from the U.S. media that Iranians are terrorists. And she would say, well, we don't think you are. And say, okay, and then you and I are friends. Our government can do anything they want to each other. But all the sanctions, all the bad media that you give, is intended for the government, is really reflecting on Iranian people. And that's not good.
Let me tell our audience who Tammy is just for a moment. Tammy, his wife, is a long-term board operator and engineer at KBOO, way longer than I've been with KBOO. And you've most recently known of her or heard of her at KBOO with Veterans Voice. She's a long-term programmer for Veterans Voice and often has commented on one Veterans Voice is on. So we full disclosure, we know Tammy and we love her. And we know Hossein and are happy to have them as part of the KBOO community. I just wanted to get that in there.
I just got the name correctly. Is the guy's name is Rick Steves. Tammy just gave me his name. Yeah, Rick Steves. Anyway, I'm sorry for the...
And he does a wonderful travel program. And if we're going to talk about Rick Steves for just a second, I will say, look at his... if you get a chance, it's on OPB here in Oregon. You can find his one on Europe and the rise of fascism. And he does a really, really good... hour-long, I think, or two-hour-long programs on the rise of fascism in the past, and then he's also talked about in the current. And he's a very progressive man and much an internationalist. I was talking with my sister, and I was complaining about the masks that one of our companies has been making in the millions and been sending overseas and not using here, and I said, they should be used here in Americans. And she said, well, pardon me, but I'm an internationalist. I want them to be used everywhere. And I found her point really well taken, and yet I found myself wanting to make sure that manufacturers locally got them to where they're needed locally. And it brought up that whole question for me, as I think the coronavirus has brought up for many people, there's a lot of moral issues around how we respond. Including is it okay for us to be sending masks abroad when we need them here? I think probably we should be sharing worldwide. We should have taken that WHO test and been able to test in this country, but that's not so. Well, I haven't gotten any of you callers out there, and callers, I want you to call in. It's 503-231-8187. take a moment and ask your question about Iran or say your statement about Iran. I know many of you, you know, are supporters of KBOO, and so you have a more broad and progressive view in general, but you must have some questions about what's gone on over there. There's been a lot of, initially when Iran first, the coronavirus first broke out, there was a lot of really strong negative propaganda, I would call it, against Iran. But I think that slowed down as their response proved to be much more different than they thought. However, right in the beginning of the coronavirus there were the elections in Iran, and I understand that the conservatives won really big this time. And that's just the opposite of the effect that Trump was saying that he wanted to have by the sanctions. Can you talk a little bit about the elections, Hossein?
Yeah, as I was saying, that, you know, they, the election probably this time was not as much participated. But
yeah, low attendance, they said.
Yes, lower attendance. But the fact that the U.S. keeps advertising for regime change, and the people see what is happening in the other part of the Middle East, when the United States wants to make a regime change, they are more, and then they look at the Iran nuclear deal that U.S. backed out from it as a very not very honest.
Well, breaking the nuclear deal was done with lies, right? I mean, because we said that they weren't holding up their end, but in fact, they had been proven to be holding up their end.
Well, that's what the Atomic Energy Observer said, that Iran has held its part completely to the letter. But United States backed out. So Iranians don't trust the United States government. Whatever they say, they go the other way. So they did have two uprisings in Iran, two really genuine uprising, but it was defeated because a lot of people were saying that is supported by United States, at least propaganda, if it's not by money or so. So this time the hardliners took over, and Iran now is more in the hands of the hardliners than before, although we have a more moderate president in Iran, but the Congress is in the hardliners' hands. And
no, I read that the standing government before the election had denied the application of 7,000 different people for election. This was a national election for the whole Congress or parliament, you call it there, and that there were 7,000 progressive people that were denied the ability to run for office, and that had a large part to do with how many of the conservatives won. Can you say anything about that?
Oh, yeah, that was ridiculous. That was totally what was expected. They participated, although they knew they didn't have much of a chance. They even purged a lot of people who were being reelected from the same parliament. They say you're not qualified. The people who were serving for 4 years or so, now all of a sudden they became unqualified because of all the propaganda, of all the pressure that the people were feeling from outside. They just gathered more against the government, and also people participation was not as high. Because they saw the whole thing as a farce. But it's
now
still
it happened
an
just a few. It is an election, and they do have. I mean, they do. excuse me, get to vote. But as you said, they didn't have as many candidates as they felt like they wanted to vote for. But also, this election happened like maybe 5 or 6 days after the first case of coronavirus. Do you think that affected the term?
I'm sure that has had some effect on it, and the people were really the more educated people took those warnings to the heart and probably did not participate. And they say, you know, nothing will change as long as this sanction is in place. Nothing will change. So it's just they're getting more and more disappointed. But, you know, this kind of thing goes on everywhere, even in the United States. You know, a lot of places, look at what happened in Wisconsin just 2 days ago.
You know, yes, where people were forced to either not vote or, risk themselves in the middle of a health crisis. So,
lot of people are not accepted to vote. You cannot vote because you had this background. You can't vote because your name is not the same. You can vote because two people have the same name. And all these things happens all over the world, including Iran.
Yes.
Linda,
they have their own forms of voter suppression, et cetera.
Now,
you said that you have nine sisters. I love that. I kind of have this image of nine sisters. I can't imagine they could boss you around.
I think Mike is telling you have some caller.
Yes, Linda, we have Dennis on the line. Can I bring Dennis on?
Oh, great. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Dennis.
Hello? Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you, Dennis.
Okay. Well, I was a teacher in Iran back in the time of the Shah, from 1980 to 1983, I taught at what was then RMA University. It's not called that anymore. I don't know what it's called now. And I also taught at Pahlavi University, but I'm sure it's not called that either. I'm just wondering, what is the state of those places? They must be continuing. I know, what used to be the Aryamir University, isn't it now Sharife or something like that? I don't know exactly what the new name of it is, but they're universities, right? Are they still going?
Dennis?
Yes?
You said you were there in 1980, or... You were there before that.
I was there actually when the Shah was there at the time of the Shah. I just had a job there at teaching mathematics at these universities. I can't remember now exactly what the dates were, but it was when the Shah was there. I think it was 1980.
Okay.
1981, 82, 83. I think that's right. I just wondered.
No. Wait. The Shah was overthrown in 1979. I was there myself from 1973.
I'm sorry. So it was early. Excuse me. It was
the years were a little different, but you were there.
I'm very sorry. I lost my dates. It was there. I was there. Much earlier than that, when the Shah was still there, I taught mathematics for 3 years in two different places. And what is now, I think, is called our Sharife University in Tehran.
Sharif.
Yeah, Sharif, and then the one in Shiraz used to be called Pahlavi.
Yeah, it was Pahlavi. I was a professor there myself in chemistry at Shiraz University.
I wasn't at Tehran University. I was at the other one, Sharife. And I was also down in Shiraz at what was then called Pahlavi University. Of course, it's not now. I don't know what the name of it is now. But I was wondering what the state of those two places are.
It's quite different. I can explain to you if you want to listen. So the Arya Mer in Tehran is now called Sharif. Sharif was one of the people who was martyred, was a student there and then became a martyr. So they named him Sharif. That university is still going, and in fact is one of the most reputable universities in the world. The reason I say that is because every year the students who participate in entrance exam at the Stanford University in mathematics, in engineering. They have to take an entrance exam. When I was still working at Intel in around mid-2000s, I got a letter from one of my friends that had forwarded the message that the president of the Stanford University has sent out, stating that we don't know what this university named Sharif in Iran does, but the students who enter and take the exam every year, they score in the 90 region, the next section from all over the world, including U.S., they are in the 70s. There's a still 20-point gap between these scores of the people coming from Sharif University only. That was amazing. Wow. That was really amazing. And when I showed it to Intel, because we were hiring people from the different places, those people who were graduated from the Stanford's now, they were looking for a job with PhDs or so. They could not get a job because they were Iranians. They didn't have green cards. But they would get offers from everywhere. But they would end up going to the teaching because they could get postdocs. Education was okay, but the industries were forbidden, especially the high-tech industry, pharmaceutical industries were forbidden to hire Iranians and three other countries. So Sharif is still thriving, and I had a lot of good friends in mathematics department. I don't know if you remember some of the professors you worked with who were there from the Shah's time. Shahi, for example, or anyway. And then
what about the other university that he Pahlavi, what about the other school?
Yeah, Pahlavi University that you cited, I was a professor there myself in the department. And I was there from 1977 to 1983, and his name was changed after the revolution to Shiraz University.
Okay.
Yeah, that university is still thriving. In fact, they're giving PhDs now in sciences. And they have moved the science department, including the mathematics, to the hills way up above Iran. That's what the promise was, and they achieved it. So I'm glad
I'm really
that
glad.
you have good memories from Iran.
I'm really glad to hear that those universities are where I was at are thriving. I really enjoyed my time there. And it was such an experience for me to be there.
Yes, Shiraz University was great. You know, I enjoyed my time there, too.
Okay. All right. Thank you very
much. Thank
you
so much. Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. Are the universities, Hossein, are the universities being directly impacted by the sanctions in any particular ways? You mentioned that the people who are studying in pharmacy and stuff, they can't leave and get jobs anywhere now. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about what happens to the universities because of the sanctions?
Well, the universities are still in operation until coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're
yes.
They've stopped. But the sanctions has caused the level of education, experimentation especially, particularly that, and also that some of the people who were the professors have left. So the higher quality people that were had education, had studied in U.S., mostly, and some from Europe, somehow could not take the pressure of the sanction because of their families or because of the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had left, including myself. I left in 1985 for my own reason, not...
yeah, for your own choices, yeah.
Because of my ex-wife,
so people...
go to school.
So for those Iranian students who were hoping to make part of their education abroad or to end up working abroad for some period of time, the sanctions have made a huge difference in how well they're able to carry out those dreams or those desires.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, is widespread. The sanction has reduced the oil revenues, especially now that the oil prices have gone down, so the university budgets have gone down, and then the services go down, and then the faculty and the other workers' salaries don't go up, and it's just the government subsidies can go so much, and therefore the pressure, you know, it shows itself. You know, the people don't go there with the enthusiasm that they had before, because now they have to find another source of income. And when you,
well, it's very hard to look forward to figure out how you're going to live when circumstances are like they are, and then of course they're now hit by the coronavirus, as is the rest of the world, and all the changes that that means. I know that every country whose regime would like to seize more power is doing that, and trying to do it in a variety of different ways, using the pandemic as a way to consolidate the wrong kinds of power. I really want to thank you very much for joining me today, Hossein. I know we didn't have very many callers, and I would have loved to have more, but I think we have had a good discussion of Iran. Is there one last thing that you would like to tell the people of America about Iran? We're going to need to wind up right now.
See, exactly. I'm glad that you asked that. One thing that really sanction has caused in Iran is what the average people in America are feeling right now. A lot of people in U.S. now are having part-time jobs. They don't get full-time jobs because companies don't want to give the insurance or health care or et cetera, et cetera. So they have to have multiple jobs. Families that used to have two jobs to make ends meet now have two or three jobs. This has been going on in Iran since 1980s. People are really tired. You know, when you have to work two full-time jobs to make your ends meet, it's really hard to...
It tears at the fabric of families as well. Tears at the fabric of relationships, because you don't get to have the time you want, and you come home depressed and tired, and not facing a home that you were, you know, able to have better in.
Yeah. So if Iran didn't have that strong core of families from historically thousands of years, it would have been totally decimated. But since they have that, they always, although they don't have much, they still send their kids to school. They still do,
yes,
you know, sacrifice everything they have to make sure the kids have a better life than themselves.
And I imagine the Iranian diaspora around the world also is now upping the amounts of money and support that they send to their families back home, just like around the world when people do that.
Yes, of course. You know, that's... But here, a lot of people who used to come here as students, they really now is very, very highest level of
that can even get here.
They can send their kids here. You don't get the ordinary to come to go to university.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Hossein. I mean, for being my guest. And I'm going to let you go now because I know we need the other phone line for the next program coming on. So
well,
this
thank
is Linda
you very much
Lesson
for
Oscar.
having me on and having the interest in the Iranian community.
Well, thank you for being available. I really appreciate it. And so we'll go ahead and end today. I want to thank Mike, who's been our engineer, and I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for being listeners to CLO. I want to let you know that because of the coronavirus, we're not having our spring membership drive, but we are still in need of money. So this is great. An anonymous donor has generously agreed to match every dollar that you, our listeners, contribute up to $20,000 by May 31st. So we're not going to have a drive. We're not going to have people calling, you know, calling in here. We're not going to be doing it in the normal way. But we do want to let you know, really, that you can still contribute and that your dollars are matched. You know, in hard times, people really step up to support KBOO, and we really appreciate it. So this anonymous donor has done that. So anybody, any amount that you give, up until we get the 20,000 by May 31st, and you can do that by going to www.kboo.fm/give. Very easy to do. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for supporting KBOO. And as I said earlier, thanks to the staff for keeping our radio station going.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, KBOO will be sticking to our regularly scheduled programming as much as possible, but there are some limitations that we're working with, so we appreciate your understanding and support. We are committed to keeping our staff, volunteers, and programmers safe and healthy, so we are transitioning to producing programs remotely. For updates on KBOO's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, visit our website at kboo.fm/COVID-19. That's kboo.fm/COVID-19.